I feel like if you have the right values and the right mindset, then you're able to pivot from one thing to the next. You mentioned the 7 core values. Are you allowed to share what those 7 core values are?
The acronym is LEADERSHIP. So it's loyalty, duty, selfless service, honor, integrity, personal courage.
Was respect one of them?
That's right.
So LDRSHIP.
That's it. People would ask, well, what's the most important one? Probably integrity. Without that one, you can't have any of the others.
Hey everyone, this is Ashley Hatch. Welcome to another episode of Ditto. We are really excited about this episode. Matt has invited another one of his special friends onto the show. We're really excited to have John Edwards onto the show. Matt, could you please introduce us to your friend John?
Yeah, what an amazing guest. This is John Edwards, everybody, a friend of mine, wonderful human being in the short time that I've known him. So professionally, he is a high impact leadership and performance coach, a strategist, and keynote speaker. So John and I, just from those titles, as you might guess, audience, share a lot of the same interest in terms of leadership development and performance psychology and training of the mind, essentially. But in addition to those wonderful things, at least professionally, John is also a retired United States Army Command Sergeant Major. We're going to find out exactly what that means and what duties and responsibilities are encompassed from that role. He was doing that for, correct me if I'm wrong, John, in the Army for a little over 23 years in the military, in the Army. Is that right? Awesome. And then most importantly, and I'm going to just say most importantly, but I from knowing John just a little time that I have, I think he might attest to this or agree to this. He is a father of 3 sons, whom all are also serving in the Arkansas Army National Guard. Is that right? Wow. Amazing. Yeah, amazing. And this is what something that I would love to get into kind of later on in the conversation. John is also a successful, like I mentioned first, successful leadership coach, and he spearheads his own kind of coaching and consulting firm, really dedicated to motivation and inspiring and cultivating purpose, fostering accountability, and cultivating this team and culture of excellence and top-tier performance, which is just, again, amazing things that are so similar in terms of my interest and my passion as well. Welcome again. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. Ashley and I are privileged. So as you might guess, audience, this episode will hopefully at least be airing closely to July 4th, Independence Day for the United States. And so Ash and I, we started thinking about a month ago, who could we get on that embodies leadership, patriotism, you know, country values, and most importantly, serving for their country. And so we wanted to bring a veteran on to the podcast, and at least someone who has firsthand experience, you know, serving in a branch of the military. And of course, you know, funnily enough, at the time of us talking about this, John, we had just had our connection for like the third time. We'd just gotten off of Zoom, and of course, it was like, oh, well, John Edwards, he's a wonderful human being, and he served for over 23 years in the U.S. Army. And so that was a kind of a no-brainer for us. And so we would love to, if you don't mind, John, gear some of the discussion towards your military experience and how it's shaped, I would argue, you know, everything you do personally and professionally. How does that sound?
Yeah, that's great, man. Yeah, and again, just thanks for having me out here. I hope I'm a good representative for, you know, the military and the veterans out there. So I'll do my best to represent well today.
Yeah, no, I'm sure you will. Sure you will.
I just wanted to, before we start off, just say thank you for your service. I think it's really cool that we get to have you on this show. This is the first time I've ever been able to sit down with a veteran, especially of your caliber, and just ask questions and hear your stories and the lessons that you've learned. And I think it'll be a very valuable conversation to our listeners. So I just want to say thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Totally.
Yeah, thank you.
I would love, John, for you to kind of paint a picture of your background and how you got into the military. You know, broadly speaking, what does that look like, this lived experience of you going into the military, being in the military, and how the progression of you getting to this command sergeant major position came to fruition? You know, for those especially that aren't familiar with the military, if you don't mind kind of dumbing it down for us, so to speak. Yeah.
Well, I have to start. We had to go way back in the day to, you know, my grandfather was, he was an active duty Air Force guy. And so growing up, I always looked up to this guy. And, you know, I didn't know the difference in the Air Force and the Army. I just saw him in a uniform. And so to me, he was Rambo, who was also one of my big role models growing up. You know, so, and then my dad was in the Marines. And so, you know, my two main male role models, you know, they were there. It was pretty much ingrained in me. They didn't try to get me to serve, but it was just something I saw, I was drawn to. So, you know, if somebody were to ask me, like, hey, when did you know you were going to serve your country? I was probably like 5 years old when I made that decision.
Wow.
That's cool.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's pretty neat. And so, you know, fast forward a little bit to senior year 2000 of high school, and I knew I was going to join still, but I did not know I was going to join at the moment or the time that I did. And had a really good recruiter. There were lots of recruiters that came in and out, and I would tell them all the same thing, like, hey, yeah, I'm going to do that. I'm going to college first. I've got this plan. Here's my path. It's planned out, you know, scholarships, et cetera. And I had this one recruiter, and he was just like, yeah, okay, I'll see you at school tomorrow. And I was like, wow, he didn't take no the same way the other guys did. And yeah, he wasn't like everybody else too. He was just a little more genuine and real, you know, and that's no knock on the other guys. And he also kind of reminded me of my grandfather. You know, he just carried himself really well. He was a big guy, you know, college linebacker type guy, and just kind of commanded some respect and presence, but also had that just genuineness and, you know, authenticity to him. And he played the long game with me. And finally, about May, right before graduation, he kind of called me out. And you want me to tell you what he said? I tried this a few times. He called me at the house. I'll never forget this. And I was on, you know, it kind of dates me a little bit, but I was on the phone that was hooked to the wall with a cord. And this was like the 6th month in a row, you know, we were going down this thing, and he said, okay, you ready to go down to the processing station? And I said, I don't know. Maybe give me another month. He's like, well, why not, John? I said, you know, I just don't think I'm ready yet. He said, you're right. This is a man's decision, and you're just not ready to make it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow. And so he's like, I'll talk to you later. He hung up the phone. And wow. I don't know if this is still the number, but I can remember the number I called back to call him and be like, okay, let's go. And I tried that, you know, later on when I became a recruiter, I tried that same line, and it worked about 50% of the time.
Wow.
Yeah. Nice. So whichever way you look at it, 50% success rate or 50% fail rate.
Yeah. But, there you go.
But I take the time to mention that because, you know, that's a high impact moment of making a decision, you know, and I think that, you know, you guys, you're into, you know, human performance and getting people out of their comfort zone and pushing past your limits. And that was a moment of high impact. I'm so thankful and grateful for. Because I wouldn't have made the decision on my own at that moment. And my entire life changed from that moment forward. And I would say for the positive. So, you know, not that I wasn't going to be successful, but it just, the path that I have been on ever since then kind of was shaped in that moment. Mm-hmm. I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
You know, so then I went on, I did a semester of college, and my high school sweetheart and I, we went to college together down there. Right before I shipped off to basic training, we found out we were going to be parents. And so, yeah. So I went to basic training at age 18 and was gone to Fort Benning, Georgia for that. Also, speaking of mentors, I had a really great drill sergeant down there that just was a guy I wanted to emulate myself after. And he set a really great standard. And, you know, not all leaders are created equal. You know, just by virtue of the position doesn't make them great at what they do. And this guy was. So really thankful to have that guy. And came back. We had a started a family and went on a little mobilization in 2003. Came back home from that. And they had always been trying to talk me into being a recruiter. And I never wanted to do that. I was like, no way. I do not want to be a salesperson. I don't want to. And it was just the right place at the right time. Somebody called me and said, hey, man, come take this job. And so I did. And the first year was absolutely miserable. It was the first time I'd ever failed at anything. And, you know, I had been told, you know, like, hey, you're not making your quota. Actually, what it was some old school style leadership. And I guess it worked on me. And, you know, that first year, I will say I'm very thankful for going through those trials and through going through that and not quitting, not giving up. Thought about it, one and two. Saw lots of my peers say, no, this isn't for me. And stuck it out, made a little bit of a move geographically from that place. And the rest is history. I went from being a 21-year-old sergeant to the E5. That's pretty young to be a sergeant. To in the same organization in Arkansas as an active duty Army non-commissioned officer. Made it to the rank of E9, Command Sergeant Major, in recruiting. So it was kind of like having the best of both worlds. We had the Army side of things. So you have all the leadership and the discipline and the structure. And we also were very much a part of a production performance organization. And we had to scale it. We had to bring in our full-time recruiters. We had to, you know, maintain a climate and a culture within that organization. And we also had to bring in and train over 2,500 soldiers, which was just awesome. Just always having this new crop of young men and women coming in, you know, patriots raising their right hand, serving their country. And then we had the opportunity to mold them and shape them for whatever time period they were in the pipeline. And, you know, so that's pretty cool. Give you a little bit of info on a sergeant major. Which is...
Yes, please.
Yeah, and that's... And P.S., it's not something that I love doing. It's being like, hey, you know, here's something. Look how cool I was. But it's more the position because there are a lot of sergeant majors out there. So the math, the rough math is, you know, like 1% or less than 1% of the population joins and serves the military. And then within that 1%, that's actually... 0.0075 of the population that becomes a command sergeant major in any branch. So that's kind of neat. I guess that makes me a unicorn, Matt. You know, it's I don't know.
I already knew that.
But and it's so neat. I just connected with another retired command sergeant major today, and we had never met each other. And you talk about connecting. You just get on, and it's just like. It's like we speak. It's like you ever see two babies in a room, and they're communicating, but you know nobody knows what they're saying. That's how it is with other sergeant mates.
That's awesome.
Yeah, John. So much to ask you. You know, as a result of that journey, one of the main interests that I have, and especially studying and having worked just for a small amount of time with the military, is this broad theme of leadership. You know, I had the amazing opportunity, for those that don't know, to work at Fort Jackson, which is a basic training installation. It's not Fort Benning. It's in Columbia, South Carolina. And as a result, we not only worked with basic training trainees, but we worked with drill sergeants. And so we went from this opposite end of the spectrum to not knowing anything about the Army, and they were just like a deer in the headlights, to going to really experienced individuals in this particular setting. And so it was a lot of fun, a lot of challenges that were present as a performance coach going and working with this particular group, these drill sergeants. So I want to ask you, you mentioned that particular drill sergeant that you had at Fort Benning was transformational, was super impactful in a positive light. What about him was transformational, was impactful? And what about him led you to, you know, at least push you in the direction to where you are today?
Yeah, that's a great question. And, you know, so looking back at this guy, there were probably three things that stand out the most about him. One, he looked like a younger version of the drill sergeant off Full Metal Jacket. And you could tell that he probably watched Full Metal Jacket every night before he went to bed and then would come That's in and, funny. You know, emulate.
Yeah. Just bulging biceps and huge shoulders.
Yeah,
and
yeah, absolutely. And he was also, you could just tell, like he was the best of all of them. In a short amount of time, you could look the way he carried himself. And he was also real. Like, so he wasn't like, you know, he didn't walk with any pomp and circumstance. He wasn't arrogant, but he was definitely the standard bearer. And you knew that. And so that's pretty cool. And he could do that without saying, you know, without saying too many words at all. And that was awesome. Mm-hmm. And he also poured into us. You could tell that he genuinely cared. And, you know, the other thing about him was, just his presence, I think, and the way that the other drill sergeants looked up to him too. You could tell that, you know, the other ones, you know, they'd mess with each other like they were peers. They were still professionals. They were great. But this one, there was just something about him. And I was like, you know, that's the guy I want to be like. And,
yeah,
you know, I don't know if I hit that mark or not, but I'm sure there were some times that probably came pretty close.
Absolutely. Ashley and I have shared this on the podcast before, John. One of mine, and I know Ashley really loves this quote as well, one of my favorite quotes of being a quote-unquote effective leader or a good leader, it comes from Brad Stevens. So he was the Boston Celtics head coach, and I think he's the executive now, just won a championship. Anyways, I think he actually stole it from a researcher who researches leadership nonetheless. He said, the best leaders or best coaches are those that are both warm and demanding. So they understand this human experience. They understand that you're sick sometimes. They understand that mental health is a part of the equation. They understand spirituality is a part of the equation. But they demand the very, very best out of you, especially in a high-pressure situation like the military, where you're preparing for life and death circumstances. And so for me, that has always resonated with me, and it was proven evident, like I mentioned previously, with some, not all, but some of the drill sergeants I also encountered and were able to interact with at Fort Jackson. It's such an interesting, unique environment that I think a lot of people, like you said, 99% of people just don't have experience in. And so, you know, broadly speaking, from this leadership standpoint, John, with the military, what can us lay persons, us civilians, learn from the military, both really good and maybe even some, not bad, but maybe improvements as well, that we can apply to our lives in terms of leadership or anything else that might stand out to you topic-wise? I know that was kind of a really long question. Sorry.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think, first of all, I love that, you know, being both warm and demanding. And, you know, as soon as you said it, I was like, yeah, that nails it. And I probably never thought of it, you know, in those terms, but, you know, even getting ready for this, like, hey, how are we going to talk about it? You know, being real and being relatable. And, you know, if your team believes in you, if they believe in you, then they're going to do anything that you ask them to do. And also, here's the other thing, the demanding part. Sometimes you have to ask really firmly, and sometimes you even have to, you know, and this is a thing people think it's a bad thing to say. Sometimes you have to make people do things that's not a bad, it's not a bad term. And, mm-hmm. and that doesn't even mean that you're being directive. Sometimes you have to be directive because we're human beings. You know, I have to have directive style leadership placed on me because I'm very stubborn and hard headed. But once you get that prod going, we're going to go do some, you know, we're going to achieve some good results. And, you know, and P.S., that's why I love sports so much, because you can be a little bit more, because it's kind of common in the sports arena to be able to be a little more assertive with athletes, you know, as a coach. I think that if you can take that same thing, you can emulate that, you know, with any company and corporation, it's still the same psychology, you know. But yeah, man. So what are some bad things? And I've seen, and this is okay too. I got to see and learn as much about my own leadership from other leaders, kind of not doing a great job at leading, you know, and not even, and no yeah. knock on them. I think they were doing the best that they knew to do, but what they believed was right. You know, now it's up to them whether they learned from it or not. I know that I did.
Right.
And I was also that young guy that had no problem, you know, because they would tell us, they'd say, hey, you're responsible to hold yourself, your peers, subordinates, and your leaders accountable. So I was also that little knothead that would go up to, you know, my leader two levels ahead of me and be like, hey, you know what? That's not right. That worked out about 50% of the time. But, and then, you know, the other times it led to some good mentorship opportunities. So,
yeah,
you know, but I think learning from it, and the Army, you're inundated with it from the very beginning. And that's another thing that's pretty cool. I might be jumping ahead. That's another reason why I believe so fondly and firmly that, you know, I would encourage anybody to go and enlist and to be part of it, because you're going to get experiences from the very beginning that you cannot get anywhere else. You're going to be thrust into, it's designed to put you in either a position of leading or a position of learning how to follow, which is just as important of a trait to learn as a leader. And, you know, there are very few places I think that you can get that, you know, especially at the age of 18, you know.
No, that's all really good stuff. One thing that I was thinking about as you were talking and just sharing your experiences with the leaders that you had and reflecting on my experience just as a soccer player, not really as cool as what you've gone through and what you've done and accomplished. But I feel like great leaders are able to create other great leaders and great followers. And I think that's something that's really cool when you look at the military and you look at the Army and just like the process that everyone goes through. I feel like you said, the leaders are the standard bearer. I really liked that because I feel like I'm sure you can attest to this. The second that you entered, you were like, there's a standard here. And that standard runs so deep and everyone knows that standard. And it's that leader's responsibility to hold that standard. And I feel like the reason why those leaders are so good, most of them, are because they started where you were and they like moved their way up. There's this natural progression. And so my question for you is that how you got, how did you get to the command sergeant? Was it time? Did you, what qualities did you show that they were like, we want John to serve in this leadership position. We want him to be the standard bearer for us.
Yeah. Great question. And before I answer it though, you know, I want to go back to something you said. You're like, hey, I haven't done all the cool stuff. I was just, you've done some pretty cool stuff and accomplished a lot.
I agree.
Yeah. So I definitely,
well, thank you.
Yeah. I don't get on to people when they use the term just, but I try not to use it myself. Like, you know, just, you know,
I'm, noted. Yeah. I'll get rid of it.
So, yeah. So back to the question, you know, from the very beginning, so growing up, I was never the biggest, fastest, or the strongest, not the smartest. And so I kind of always had to adopt a little bit of a scrappiness in anything that I did, especially sports. And you know, when I joined the Army and I got to basic training, it really kind of blew my mind that there were so many people, and this is, I had to learn this lesson. This is kind of human nature. There were so many people that weren't just giving maximum effort at all times. And I think to them, they were like, why is this guy giving all this effort all the time? Calm down, guy. And it's just kind of the way that I grew up. And so when I put that to use, you know, I was very rarely was I ever the best, you know, at whatever was going on. But I was in the mix. And when you show up consistently, day by day, just trying your best, then good things are going to happen. So that's what I applied to. And honestly, looking at my whole career, my entire career, you know, I made it to the rank of sergeant 2.5 years, and that's really fast. And that was just by, you know, trying really hard and being good, and kind of outpacing your peers. And that, you know, the Army, they are just this big scaling machine, and you're being evaluated at all times, and promotions are, you could stick around and do the time thing and eventually be the person that gets that promotion, or, you know, you can be out there sprinting and just doing your best. And, you know, I think that's what happened. Even in when I got into recruiting, and that was hard. It was a challenge. It was difficult. You know, it was very much not like the military that I signed up to be a part of. But, you know, just showing up every day, finding a process, staying in the process, you know, so there's some discipline stuff going in there. And so when you can apply discipline and also pretty high level of motivation, I think that was it. I think that was the key for me. Just, you know, and people appreciate that. Like, that is a good character trait when somebody really cares and you can tell. And they're trying and they're giving effort. And so, you know, I always try to impart that, you know, when somebody's having a tough time or they're not winning or they're not at the level they want to be. I'm like, man, just look, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep showing up, because that's huge. You know, mm-hmm. those little wins are going to add up. And so that's what happened for me, just being consistent, and being resilient, you know, not slacking when the opportunity came.
That's really important. Thanks for sharing.
Hey, John, I want to switch gears just a little bit, but it's very much directly related to leadership. This idea of knowing your audience, knowing the culture that you are in, has proven for me to be really beneficial, especially from a leadership standpoint, whether I'm the one leading or helping other leaders be better leaders. So this idea, at least how they phrase it in the literature, this idea of cultural competence, it was a funny experience for me in working with the military when I did, not to mention the acronyms, which is like a whole different language. You hear it all the time and I'm like, wait, do that again for me. Okay. Now what does that one mean? Okay. Well, I thought this one meant this one. No. It was so confusing. And then they would throw words out like civvies. And I remember the first time I heard civvies thinking, what are we talking about here? Like, oh, the clothes that you're wearing, the civilian clothes, they call them civvies. And so anyways, there were things like that, just the language alone was, for an outsider like me, a civilian, going in was kind of hard and kind of challenging. And so to help leaders be better leaders, I made it a task on my own to learn the best I could the culture of the Army. And then when I went to the Air Force, similarly, I spent more time with the Army than I did the Air Force, but Army especially. So for you, especially in recruiting, you know, this idea of cultural competence and speaking the language, sometimes literally, like the Army, of people that you're trying to lead or trying to recruit and sell, so to speak, what role has that played in your experience, especially in this domain of the military?
Yeah, that's... you know, especially in recruiting, I think that is, that's a big one right there. But, yeah, you know, being able to relate to your audience, that's a big one, because, you know, depending on what you're doing, you know, and I think anywhere you go, if you don't have that level of relatability, they're kind of going to eat you up, you know, and you got to prove some relevance. But I don't know. I just always, that's, you want me to tell you a real funny place that I learned how to connect with people? And you're going to think this is silly. But when I was, you know, then we started hiring recruiters. And just because someone was an excellent soldier, an excellent leader, does not mean they were going to be an excellent recruiter. It's a completely different skill set. It's a good start, for sure. But I think I learned how to connect with people a lot doing, like, while I was going to college, like waiting tables and bartending and just having to connect and interact with so many people, you know, that are usually, if you're hungry, they're a little bit cranky. And so, you know, and wanting to please them so that you could get a better tip, you know, and I do know that there's, you know, there's some good stuff there. Whenever I was hiring recruiters, that's, someone was a waitress or a, you know, any type of customer service, you know, industry, that was always something good because they were trying to please somebody, you know, and I think that's a different take. You know, I don't think you'll have too many leaders, you know, at least while they're in the Army, go, yeah, hey, we're trying to make everybody happy, because you're not, you can't do that, especially as a leader.
Right. Yeah.
But it doesn't hurt to try, you know, and at least be likable. Yeah. Being likable goes a long way too. And as a recruiter, we'd have to sit, let me tell you how many living rooms I sat in with very strong, mama bear figure, you know, who's 17.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Wow, yeah.
So, yeah, you want to talk about adversity. but being able to go in there and, you know, first of all, be honest and sincere and tell the truth, you know, even if it's not what they wanted to hear. But you got little Johnny over here going, yeah, I'm okay with deploying. And you've got mom going, no, it's never going to happen. And, you know, having to work through that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's where I talk about kind of the best of both worlds. So we still completely had the military and the leadership side. And, you know, and then recruiting had a lot, you know, not just performance metrics and, you know, meeting quotas, but interacting with people. And I really didn't realize how much that those interactions were setting me up for something
interesting,
pretty high impact later, and the ability to go in and connect and resonate, you know, and maybe read your audience too. I think that's an important piece too.
I love it. Nick, you know, speaking to your point, one of my favorite quotes from Nick Saban, the GOAT, said, if you want to make everybody happy, sell ice cream. Don't be a leader. And it speaks to your point, I think, exactly. And man, I can't think of a more proven domain than the military. You gotta let them know how it is, because it's a really high impact and impactful and performance domain that literally can be life or death. So
yeah, I think that's really interesting too. Like, to your point, Matt, what you were saying, like, if you want to make everyone happy. But I think what's also important to recognize is your leaders, or you specifically, said you would like to make everyone happy. Like, you want that, but you also understand that it's not possible. And so, like, having that understanding, and I think that's probably where your genuineness comes from. And that's why people knew that you were genuine, because you're honest, but you're also holding that standard. And I feel like that's what makes being a leader so hard, is being able to, like, balance that, because you care for the people that you're leading, but you're also going to have to ask them to do things that are hard. And I know for me, the best coaches or the best leaders that I've had, they weren't easy on me, but I would do whatever it was that they asked me to do, because I knew that it was what was either best for me or what was best for the team. And I trusted them, and I trusted their vision and the direction that we wanted to go. And there's only a few coaches that I can say were good at that, because the other coaches, to your point, Matt, just wanted to be liked. And when you play that leadership game of just trying to be liked by everyone, I feel like you'll always fail. So I think that's what makes being a leader so hard. But I think also just that genuineness is really important. And if you can find a way to marry the two, then I feel like that's what makes a really good leader. But yeah, those are very interesting points that you brought up.
Yeah, absolutely. And what wonderful components as well, Ashley, for parenting. I'm like, I can't think of, you know, you hear all the time, my wife sometimes calls me the buddy parent, or like the friend parent, or the fun parent. Yeah. That's the phrase she uses. And I, at first I was like, yeah, of course I want to be fun with my kids and wrestle and play around. And when they want like an extra Starburst, I'll give them an extra Starburst or whatever. But then I'm like, what am I doing here? You know, like, am I just trying to be the one that is fun and just bring all the happiness, or am I helping them truly grow holistically via this avenue? And it was a kind of an internal battle for me as a parent. I have a 7-year-old and a 3.5-year-old. And so lately I haven't been strict and, you know, very demanding type of parent as of late, but I'm trying to make certain pivots as a leader, as a parent, so that I can reflect that, what you just said, Ashley, and what you were alluding to as well, John. So here's my question in regards to that. We mentioned at the very start how all three, I believe, of your sons are in the National Guard, right? So it's like, it went grandpa, it went dad, it went you, and now your three sons. You know, from a leadership and parenting perspective, how has your experience, especially in being in the military, being in the U.S. Army, impacted your experience now as a parent to these three sons that are essentially following dad's, grandpa's, great-grandpa's footsteps?
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's, you know, people ask me that all the time, and they're like, oh, so I guess you recruited your sons, right? And I did not. And I actually never had a conversation with them about why they should do it. They always would come to me and they would ask questions. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was funny. The oldest one, I pulled up to the armory one day and his car was in the parking lot. And I walked in and there he is with one of my recruiters. I was a supervisor. Mm-hmm. And he was sitting there at the table. So he was doing his own thing.
Wow.
And, you know, I'm proud, really proud moment of all three of them. Yeah, for sure. And, you know, that's really cool. You know, and it would be totally okay if one of them or all of them would have said, yeah, you know, I'm going to pivot and go this complete other direction. Yeah. But, you know, I think there's a lot of values, you know, and that's the thing about the Army. You know, there's a set of core values, you know, the 7 Army values. And, you know, we live by those, you know, not just because we're professionals, you know, in that organization, but that's the kind of stuff that we live by in my family, mm-hmm. you know, integrity and selflessness and, you know, having respect. And that's, so they were just the kind of guys that, when they had the opportunity to kind of step up, they did it. So that's big time, man. And honestly, that's the part about being out that I miss the most is like, man, I could still be in there hanging with those guys, but it's probably best I got out. They don't need me overshadowing them. Cause I can, you know, they could all outrun me by the time they were 13, by the way. And they're little athletes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
They're pretty good.
With that in mind, yeah, John,
the oldest,
go ahead, keep going.
Oh, so I was just gonna say the oldest so he graduated college and commissioned as a second lieutenant.
Oh, wow.
So he's the first commission officer in the family too. So it's really neat.
Yeah. Amazing. You mentioned briefly retirement. You did this for about 23 years. What led ultimately to that decision? Why weren't you in there 25 or 30 or even longer? You're not that old.
You know, I appreciate that. Man, that's a, you know, when you talk about, I think there might be a conversation about transitioning later too. So I was Title 32 in Arkansas, which means I was a full-time National Guardsman. And every year we have an active service kind of retention board that comes. And never at any point was I in the conversation for getting caught up in that retention point. Because it was the same thing, like, oh yeah, John's 38 years old. You know, he's at one time one of the youngest sergeant majors in the nation. So that's kind of neat. And they came in one day and they called me up to the hill and they're like, hey man, yeah, we thought we were going to have to, attrit 3, we're going to have to attrit 5, you know, and, or however many it was. And so, So I didn't really make the choice. The Army made that choice for me in a little bit of a downsizing sort of atmosphere. You know, and as so it wasn't my plan, but man, you know, sometimes you just have to go with the flow and go, okay, this is, it's not my plan, but it's somebody else's plan. And let's find the next purpose. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's a great question. Yeah. So at 39, I had retirement papers and retired at 40.
I know Ashley can relate to that. Just not having the plan, what you thought at the first of a season, and then just kind of being, you know, adjusting and adopting whatever life or coach or team throws at you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, definitely. It's not easy, but I feel like if you have the right values and the right mindset, then you're able to see it as an opportunity and move and pivot from one thing to the next. You mentioned the seven core values. Are you allowed to share what those seven core values are, or are they a secret?
It's it's not a secret. It's actually, it's one of the first things that we ingrain and we teach to, you know, new soldiers, like even before they go to basic training. We want to talk about the values, and we also want to, get after teaching them the motto and, you know, just the whole thing that gives them like this organizational understanding. But no, it's the acronym is leadership. And so it's loyalty, it's duty, selfless service, honor, integrity, personal courage.
Was respect one of them?
Yeah, there you go. That's right. It was, yes. Okay. Yeah. Personal courage was the last one. Man, you know.
Yeah, I got them. I wrote them down.
There we go. We got it. Okay, good deal.
Yep.
You put me in the spot. I still got it.
So, nice. So LDRSHIP, right?
That's it.
Yeah. Leadership. Leadership. Got it.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
And, you know, so like you have honor that encompasses all of them. And, you know, people would ask, well, what's the most important one? It's probably integrity. Because without that one, you can't have any of the others. So,
yeah that's really cool. Thanks for sharing.
Yeah, you bet.
Absolutely. Another acronym that we all have to learn.
I feel like this is a really good one to learn.
I know it is a very good one. Yeah. Hey, John, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this. So, again, the short amount of time I was working with the U.S. Army as essentially a cognitive performance specialist, I want to ask you first, did you come in contact with any master resilience trainers or cognitive performance specialist type of people in your 23 years of being in the Army? And if so, what was that experience like from this psychological standpoint of training as a United States soldier?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I think I was there when that initial initiative started being adopted. And I don't know how long it goes back, but when I first became aware.
Early thousands, 08, I think.
Okay, yeah.
Maybe 10, 2010, something around there.
So I can remember when they first started coming to us, and they would, you know, they wanted someone from each platoon. And that platoon's a, you know, a size of anywhere from 25 to maybe a smaller platoons, maybe 10 to 12. They wanted there to be somebody who was master resiliency trained in each platoon. And, you know, then later on with each squad, and then... So we would send somebody, typically a senior, you know, very responsible and looked up to NCO to go. And then they'd come back and they'd train the trainer and share what they learned. And honestly, at first, you know, and just give you some candid feedback, I'm sure that, you know, you can imagine all these tough Army guys when they come back and they start talking about, hey, you got to hunt the good stuff and you got to focus on the positive. You're like, man, where did you go? You know, did you go to yoga school?
Happy camp. Yoga school.
But man, you know, I wish, you know, in 2008, 2010, yeah, that sounds very right, because I can even remember the guy that they sent from my platoon that came back. And man, an important and a group of recruiters, you know, because you're just, you're failing most of the time. You got a lot of pressure, and you know, that's just important stuff. I don't think we realized in the middle of it, you know, how important it was. Now, the guys that went to the school, they always loved it. They always came back and they were eager to share. And so I became an advocate once I became a senior leader in getting as many people, you know, into those schools as possible. And we were in a different spot where we didn't have one on hand, you know, like one of the major bases. So we would have to send our guys out and get them trained.
For those just context that have no idea what John's talking about, there roughly in 2008, 2010, positive psychology, more specifically, Dr. Martin Seligman from the University of Pennsylvania, he came up essentially from his research with this curriculum of resiliency and resiliency training that he then presented first and foremost to the United States Army, and other branches, I believe, are now adopting it as well. And so you would, this curriculum and this training was adopted, and then, you know, both civilians would come in, like myself, with a master's or PhD, mostly in sport and performance psychology, and or already enlisted or, you know, current military individuals coming to these trainings to then be certified as these resilient trainers. And so you would go to these usually 2 week long trainings, these schools, and you go over all of this mostly positive psychology curriculum, which would then, you know, certify you as a master resilience trainer. There's level 1 and 2, 3 and 4. I got to level 2. That's the highest I got, as an MRT. So master resilience trainer. But for me, it was really cool to see, you know, me working hand in hand with other, you know, military folks that are in, you know, quote unquote, the heat of the battle, that are, you know, in it, actually going and doing it. And then me coming in as a civilian with my background and trying to contribute as much as I possibly can. It was, a life-changing experience. Honestly, I learned so much from a leadership standpoint, emotional regulation standpoint, just a whole bunch, and how to be better human beings and lead human beings, most importantly. So for those that want to know what it is that we're talking about. Anyways, I have one more question that I want to ask, but Ashley, do you have any pressing questions that you want to...
No, go for
it. You want to ask?
Go for it,
no?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, John, here's the big one. You know, this episode, like I mentioned at the very, very start, will be airing around the 4th of July. So here's my question. What message, if any, would you like to share with the listeners about the importance of leadership, stuff that we've already talked about service, and about patriotism for this country in today's society?
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, it's a good one, right?
Big
there.
Question.
It's good. It's a good one. You know, I think I'll start with the individual, you know, who's thinking about it. I said earlier, like, I think everybody should, right? And very fortunately, we live in a country during a time and place where we have an all-volunteer service. Not everyone has to. And that right there is a pretty good reason to go ahead and do it, you know? And I always say this, anyone who has thought about it, you know, because and it isn't for everyone, and that's completely an honest statement. But I think most people who have thought about it and think they would enjoy it or they would be good at it or want to experience it, they should. And it doesn't mean it's all going to be great, because it's not. But that's also what builds character, and that in and of itself is the reason why I think everyone should experience it, because the lessons that you're going to learn. You know, you talk about leadership. I think there's a lot more important things. You know, we talked about the values.
Yeah.
And there's so many positive things for a young person, just that camaraderie that you build, those relationships that you build. I haven't seen the guys that I went to basic training with since 2001. If I saw them today, it would be instantly like reconnecting with, you know, a brother or cousin or best friend. You know, and so, you know, there's just so many good things, you know, outside of, you know, paying for college and all, you know, there's all kinds of benefits, but really the benefits, really, those are just extras. It's those intangible things that really make a big difference. Now, you know, in today's society, why should you? I think it's really important to talk about standard bearing and, you know, calling to action. Like, I think now more than ever, we need those individuals who do have what it takes, you know, right here to go ahead and step forward, set the standard, and continue to carry that flag and wave it with pride too. You know, we're still a great nation. We're still the United States of America, regardless of, you know, anybody's political beliefs, regardless of anyone's, you know, social beliefs. It's still an amazing place, and freedom still isn't free. There's still a price for it. And man, you know, I'm one of those lucky guys that, you know, I haven't faced some of the extreme adversity that our service members have faced, but there's guys that, and there's guys and girls that have shown up and will continue to show up, and will do that without hesitation, without blinking an eye. And those people are cut from a different cloth. And, you know, people thank me all the time, and I feel a level of guilt every time. So I just always make sure to pass that on to everybody else who's serving, like anytime. But yeah, we got some amazing people out there, and you know, it's being a servant. Yeah, I could go into like purpose and, you know, what's our purpose in life. I could go into that, you know, if you guys really wanted to, but. And I think it's a place where you kind of learn your purpose too, and you get to fill things out.
That was great.
Yeah. No, I think that was beautiful. And before I have Ashley close this out, I want to say thanks again, John, truly, yeah. For the time that you've taken to talk to us today and give us this new perspective, this personal lived experience perspective on what it's like to be in this domain. Like you mentioned numerous times, very little of the population is able to speak to this. And so to, you know, bring your insight and your experiences into this, especially around leadership and some of these other topics that we've talked about today. Yeah, we greatly appreciate it.
Yeah. Thanks so much for having me on. And, you know, you guys, I love what y'all do. You know, we connected and instantly, you know, even though we come from, you know, different backgrounds and kind of different, industries, it's still the same thing. It's the same psychology. It's the same passion, and you know, putting that into use to help serve others, help them, you know, achieve their goals and to push past their barriers and, you know, overcome adversity. All the things, you know, anything that's human performance related, it's good stuff. So, Ashley, it's great to meet you.
Yeah, yeah. If so we nice were in to person, meet you too.
I wish I could get your autograph.
We can always send something in the mail, or maybe one day we'll meet in person. Okay. If you're ever out in DC, let me know.
All right. I definitely will. That's awesome.
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for joining. We really appreciate everything that you shared with us today. And I know I learned a lot, so I know our listeners will learn a lot. So thank you so much. Appreciate it.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, everyone, for joining and for listening in. We really appreciate it. We hope you enjoyed today's episode. And Matt has an exciting idea he wants to share with us.
It is very exciting. And I'm hoping you can find it exciting as well. Okay, so here's my idea, everybody. We want to do a Q&A type of session. So basically making you, the listener, part of the episode. And who knows, maybe your question will be aired on the episode. So keep this on your radar. We're going to be posting on our socials.
All the socials.
All the socials on about this forthcoming episode. And basically it's going to be you submitting a question that we can walk through and unpack on the episode. And we can even read your name if you want us to. And or not, if you wanted to remain anonymous, that would be fine as well. Anyway, so I'm continuing to go on. I need to shut up now. Keep that on your radar. That's coming up. Thanks so much for listening. As always, we love you. Please leave feedback, good, bad, in between. Share, like, love.
Subscribe.
What's the other? Subscribe. That's the other.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay.
Cool. Thanks.
Bye, everybody. Bye.